The Lord be with you.
With your
spirit. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus said to his disciples, I have come to set the earth on fire, and how I wish it were already blazing. There's a baptism with which I must be baptized, and how great is my anguish until it is accomplished. Do you think that I have come to establish peace on earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. From now on, a household of five will be divided, three against two, two against three, a father who will be divided against his son, and a son against his father, a mother against her daughter, and a daughter against her mother, a mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. The Gospel of the Lord. So it's funny that after a gospel like that, we say, glory to you, Lord Jesus Christ. Because it seems like Jesus is having a really bad day. Doesn't it? And it kind of comes out the wrong way. And I'll return to this. To I have come, not to bring peace, but to divide. I'll tell you two stories. About 2 months ago, so I belong to the Jesuit community, and Jesuits, we are good men, but good people sometimes don't do good things. And about 2 months ago, we were talking about a brother Jesuit who was, you know, struggling, and there were about four of us. And we tried to help him out in different ways, but sometimes, like us, sometimes we're dense. And we don't get it. So we sort of talked about him, but this time it kind of went south. You know how it is when the group talks about someone and everyone is so excited and hopeful that they could be successful in helping the person, but the person refuses. Now we kind of talk bad about him. And I felt it, but I, oh no, don't tweet, don't rock the boat, you know, just go along. And that got to me. It got to me, like, gosh, tree, you just more than gossip. You drag his name into the mud, even though these people love, we all love him. And then a few weeks later, something similar happened again. And so by that time, right at that moment, you know, when you're about to jump in the fray and throw in another piece of dirt, I remember what it felt like. And I said, guys, should we be doing this? And first of all, you know, two of my brothers were like, oh, yeah. And then we all stopped. And we said, no. No, we can't do this. So then eventually, this episode, we were able to help our Jesuit brother. When we let go of shooting on him. That's one story. The other one happened 2 weeks ago. So I went to World Youth Day. Some of us here went to World Youth Day. A wonderful experience. But at the end of it, I was able to visit an hour and a half from Krakow. It's the Auschwitz death camp. It's two death camps, actually. One smaller one, and because the Gestapo, the SS, couldn't kill fast enough, they built a bigger one. And you ever been there? So I've been to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and I've been to the Museum of Tolerance here in L.A., and they were not easy experiences, but nothing prepared me for this. So in about a size of 30 acres, which is beautiful, beautiful land, in 4 years, 1.1 million of our brothers and sisters who were Jewish, Polish, Russian, Catholic, and other people who are not quite the same eugenics, not quite the genetic code, were systematically, atrociously exterminated. It was hard. It was a traumatic experience for me. And walking through both of these camps for 2.5 hours, it was really hard. And towards the end, I asked the question that Elie Wiesel, in his book Night, asked, where are you, God? Where are you in all of these atrocities? And one's response is, God is dead in the person hanging in the gallows. And another response is, God is dead with the person in the gallows. I didn't have an answer. But as I walked, I noticed that even though in the 2.5 hours of a lot of grief and trauma, there was an underlying peace. I know this peace well in my life. I knew it when I walked in Jerusalem and asking the same question, Lord, at the place where you live and died in 2,000 years, there's still so much fighting. And what struck me in Auschwitz is what happens there hasn't stopped. It hasn't stopped in the terror that we see all the time. It hasn't stopped in the 1.4 abortions in the United States. It hasn't stopped in the rise of refugees in the world. It hasn't stopped in the rise of human trafficking and sex trafficking, 35% of which these women are in the United States. Bless you. The list goes on. It hasn't stopped. Where are you, Lord? I didn't hear an answer, but I received this deep, steady voice within. I'm here. I've always been here. With you, with all of you. It's the same response I receive in Jerusalem, same response when I work with street kids. It's a similar response, so to speak. This deep underlying, but on top of it, a lot of turmoil and difficulty and division. Which takes me to Jesus' difficult saying today. I have come. Do you think I have come to bring peace? No, I have come to bring division. But we know that is not the mission of Jesus. We know that in Luke's gospel, when Jesus came into the world, what do the shepherds and the angels announce? Peace on earth to people of goodwill. And when John the Baptist came into the world, his father, Zechariah, said this, you will prepare the way for the Messiah who will bring about peace. And elsewhere, Jesus promised to give us the spirit of peace. So what's going on here? Is he having a bad day? Well, a big clue has to do with how the Mediterranean mindset understands peace. There are actually 8 different understandings of shalom in the Hebrew language. But none of them includes no conflict, silent, order, serenity. Instead, the Middle Eastern idea of peace includes noisy, clamor, children crying, adults shouting, and rivalries in family. Very unlike many of the Western idea of peace. And moreover, the biblical idea of peace involves justice, a way of people relating in which everyone is deeply respected and that everyone is honored, and taking advantage of each other is not the way. And so, Jeremiah lived in a time when he spoke against the injustice of the king and the people. What happens to him? What happens to all of us who speaks truth against power? We are thrown in jail. We are thrown in the cistern. Because, look around in our world. This is not a fire and brimstone homily, but look around in the world. We don't have this kind of community of justice, of concrete and compassionate love. We have wonderful signs, but we have a lot to go. So when Jeremiah and Jesus speak about it, it's like rocking the boat. It's like bringing division. But the first word of the gospel, what Jesus says, I have come to set the world on fire, and it's my deep anguish that it is done. He's actually talking about his own passion. He knows what he's talking about. He knows that his mission is to bring about this deep, lasting peace, a peace below the division. Part of his task, we have to point out how we are divided, and that we are divided, and that we need divine help and divine justice. And so he speaks of an anguish, just like my brother and I, my brother Jesuit and I, we really want to help the other Jesuit, but we kind of did it our way. We shoot on him. We try to fix him. And then when he didn't do it our way, we talk smack about him. And when we're able to realize, wait a minute, maybe this is not God's way. Maybe our way to love, to help, did involve truth. And we had to struggle with accepting him as he is before we tried to help. And then my experience in Auschwitz is not over. I'm still praying about this. There's something I need to do. I don't know what yet. But I'm still praying about it. And it's not over. And in many ways, I still feel the trauma. But that doesn't take away the peace. And so the peace that the Lord wants to bring to you and I is not the, it's the peace with the kind of fire, but not the kind of fire we have in Santa Barbara, or not the kind of fire that burns on the outside. It's the fire that Pope Francis talks about, that God, that Jesus wants to enkindle, to light the fire of God's spirit of love in our heart, the fire of peace, which first will burn away that which is not peace, will burn away that which is selfishness, will burn away that which is misery. St. John of the Cross talks about love burns away the pain. And some treatment you can do that. You burn away to shut the bleeding. And so there's a fire of God's love, of God's peace, that will bring out the need for mercy, for my own need for mercy. And that will seem like things will get worse. That will seem like I'm rocking the boat. That will seem like, oh, why are you saying all these horrible things? Why don't you be politically correct? Why don't you do all the right things? Why don't you do what everyone else is doing? But the fire of God's peace will first burn. It burns in the heart of Jesus. It burns in each of our heart. And that's the anguish that any of us who wants to follow the Lord will experience. And sometimes the anguish of being helpless to help someone, or helpless that we cannot help anybody. So if you and I feel have the feeling of we walking through or driving through and seeing a homeless person, what do? Too busy? We drive through. I'm not saying you have to stop every time. But can you at least, and I, take a moment and to say, Lord, that's a child of yours. That's a human being. That's not a homeless problem. And Pope Francis talked a lot about this. See that mercy has a face. See that homelessness have a face. See the refugee has a face. See the person has this face. And when we encounter that, we're not just encountering the problem. We're encountering the Lord of life. The spirit that wants to renew, to transform, to purify your heart and my heart. Because the Lord is already here. By the grace of baptism, we all have this fire of God's Spirit. But you and I, oftentimes, we are so afraid of it. Because sometimes it causes us to be uncomfortable. It causes us to go beyond our boundary, beyond our comfort zone, beyond our prejudice, beyond our narrowed view of what is right and wrong. Because that's what God's Spirit does. Frees us from our myopic vantage point of the world. And so, God's Spirit will bring first an audacity of mercy, which is first and foremost, Lord, I need, we need your abiding love and mercy. We can't do this on our own. We don't even see what's right. And then, from that audacity of mercy, perhaps what Pope Francis called an apostolic courage. The courage to speak up. Maybe not with anger. Maybe with anguish. But to speak up and to have those difficult conversations. Which I'm going to ask for your prayer. After this Mass, I'm going to go to a family and there's going to be intervention. The children ask for an intervention with the dad. It's not going to be easy. The dad trusts me, but he doesn't want me to come. He says, Father, we should solve our own problem. You shouldn't be part of this. It's going to be not pretty. And it might take a long time. But the children, that's the audacity of mercy. That's the apostolic courage. We have to bring this into the light. It's going to be hard. And any conversations that speaks to truth about what's going on in our family cannot be easy. But if you and I do not begin to look at this, then the fire of God's peace cannot be ablaze in our own heart. And the Lord continues to have this anguish. The goal of the mission of Jesus is not to divide, but the means sometimes. Because why? Because every time you and I preach mercy and unconditional love, we and others have a choice to choose yes or to choose no. It's not God who divides. It's because any proclamation of God's great mercy and God's unconditional abiding acceptance will have a yes and a no. And the division comes from that. And even with this division, the response of the Lord to you and I can be maybe silent. I'm here. I've always been here. And every time in my life when I let this reality sink into my heart, into my life, there's a steadiness. Sure, my problems, the challenges that we have together won't go away for a while. The anguish, the pain, the confusion, the kind of awkwardness against each other may take some time. But the fire of God's purifying love is still at work. Because the peace that the Lord promised is not the one that is very quiet, very silent, and no noise at all. But it is a transforming peace. A peace that lasts. A peace that will ignite and reignite your heart and my heart and our hearts. One point about the election. If you Google Ignatian Solidarity Network, they have a wonderful reflection about the election. So then a lot of us don't feel like, oh my God, it's a horrible choice, I feel so helpless, I can't do anything. At least there's some proactive ways of looking at it. Yes, even in our election, it stirs up a lot of things in us. Let it be stirred and invite the Lord to take the greater place. Because that peace of the one who loves us, who will never let us go, that peace is deeper than any difficulty, any rocking of the boat, any anguish, any dis-ease that you and I may be feeling or may continue to feel. And when we receive communion, whether you actually receive the body and blood or a spiritual reception for some reason or another, the same Lord wants to abide in your heart and my heart. And not just physically. I'm here. I'm here. I will anchor your anguish. I will anchor your pain. And together, I will bring slowly, slowly, you and those you love a little closer into the kingdom of justice. A kingdom where we can regard each other with utmost respect and with the dignity and honor of the children of God. Yes, Jesus wants to bring about genuine, lasting peace. And the fire of the Spirit will bring that peace. But in the meantime, we may have to accept division and messing up and being on the way towards this deeper, lasting peace.